Gary, and expressing our appreciation for the presence of everyone here this morning, and a welcome to you if you're visiting with us especially. Glad to have you with us. Hope you'll stick around a little bit after services this morning and let us get to know you a little better. As Jeff alluded to this morning, we began our song service, and I certainly appreciate the songs he selected to lead this morning. Our theme for 2022, taken from the Christian Standard Bible wording of Titus 2:14, so to be eager to do good works. And certainly it's, I think, imperative that you look at that in the context that Brother Bill just read for us there. That's among the things that God's grace teaches us to do. And that's the point that Paul is making to Titus. And again, as we examine what Paul has to say to Titus, we understand in the context it's that this is what he is to teach others. So by extension, what Paul is saying to Titus is what he wanted Titus's audience to hear. And what's been revealed and preserved for us is what we need to hear about these things. But of course, now as a preacher, I'm really glad verse 15 is there, because you get your preacher instructions. See, I'm to declare these things, exhort and rebuke with all authority. He said, let no one disregard you. So this morning, for a few minutes, I'm going to do some declaring. I hope to do quite a bit of exhorting, and we might get a little rebuke worked in there. But it's totally up to you whether or not you're going to disregard me. But what we're going to talk about is really everything that Paul had to say to Titus about good works. And I want to add a caveat here for the benefit of our members of the Eastside family here, as well as I'm going to brag on you a little bit to our visitors. I really do not believe this is a subject which is foreign to this group of believers that meet here on Small House Road. This is a group that I think any measure of observation or experience would tell you is a group that is, in fact, eager to do good works. So let me suggest to you that that's not the starting place that I think we have a problem with this. But let me suggest to you that, as with most things, I'm willing to say I could do more. And I hope you'd be willing to say that. And again, as I look across this audience and I see some folks that I know are eager to do works, I can also say I'm not sure that all of us are as engaged in that as some of us. So what I would suggest to you is, you think about this, particularly as a challenge for us here locally in 2022, let's think about it this way. Let's try to this for 2022 to be a year where more of us are more eager to do more good works. And let's think about it that way. So as we read the charge again, as it's revealed to us, as it's recorded in the CSB, I want you to notice the importance of good works as it's revealed here for us in chapter 2 and verse 14. Talking of Jesus, it says he gave himself for us to redeem us from all lawlessness and to cleanse for himself a people for his own possession, eager to do good works. And I think nestled in that context, it becomes clear to us just how central this idea is in God's plan for his people. You start reading Titus 2 and verse 14, and we're going to talk about something that's predicated on the fact that he gave himself for us. That's a pretty big deal, isn't it? It's a pretty important aspect of the gospel. Because so he gave himself for us, and he did it to redeem us. Then you guys, we're talking about something important here. He not only did he redeem us, he cleansed us, and he made us his own people, a people for his own possession. And as important as all those ideas are, as central as they are to the gospel, that people for his own possession has a purpose. And the purpose, he says here, is that they be eager to do good works. Really, it's an ideal very similar to what Paul will tell the Ephesians in Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10. He will tell those Christians they were created in Christ Jesus for good works. There's certainly an element of purpose statement in those two ideas, and I think we ought to realize and notice that. But as we're going to talk about the importance of good works, then we need to talk about what are good works and define that a little bit for ourselves so that we understand what it is, in fact, we're talking about. If we're going to describe or determine what is a good work or what are good works, let me suggest for you the first criteria we'll look at is available right here to us in this passage, is that in order to be a good work, it has to be lawful. In fact, you'll see very much the reason or something Jesus did for us when he gave himself for us, as we've just talked about and remembered, he redeemed us from all lawlessness. So those things that are outside the law, those things that are done that are lawless, we've been redeemed from that. So the works that we would do would need to be according to the law. Turn to Matthew chapter 7, if you will, because this principle is borne out in something Jesus says very early in his preaching. And Matthew 7, 21 following is one of those passages that I realize many of you may be very familiar with, but if anyone isn't, they need to be. And for those of us that are aware of it, we need to continue to make sure we understand and accept the weight of the teaching that's there. In Matthew chapter 7, verse 21 beginning, listen to what Jesus says, and again with the idea of the importance of works being lawful. Jesus says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven." And as we parse this passage, I want you to realize what Jesus is saying there. Jesus is acknowledging there will be those who make a claim to me as Lord. That's what Jesus says. Yet Jesus says they will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Why? Because they have not done the will of my Father that is in heaven. We might think, well, those who would profess that Jesus is Lord, but they're busy. They're doing a lot of things they believe are good works. Well, Jesus addresses that in verse 22. "On that day, many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name?'" So Jesus is talking about those who would profess him as Lord and those who would do what in their mind and in their heart they believe to be good works. Those that would make a claim to have done good works when they stood in judgment. And yet Jesus completes the thought for us in verse 23. "And then will I declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness.'" And you see the importance of that word. Oh, they were working, but they weren't works contained in the law. They were lawless. They weren't according to verse 21, the will of my Father. And Jesus' response to those would be, "I never knew you. Depart from me." And so as we can see the danger of working works that aren't according to the law, that are lawless, that are outside the law, that would be concerning to us. Except that we have the assurance that we can know all good works, therefore, that are lawful. And that would be the next question. Well, how am I going to know what is lawful? Well, Paul takes care of that in a companion letter when he writes Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 16. And this is what Paul says about that conundrum as you think about it. It says, "All scripture is breathed out by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, equipped for every good work." Every good work. So if it's a good work, it's in there. If it's not in there, it's not a good work. But the man of God is equipped for every good work, Paul says. And the idea is here in Titus as well. In chapter 1 and verse 16, talking about folks that Paul here describes as the defiled and the unbelieving, here's what he says about them in writing Titus in this context. He says, "They profess to know God, but they deny him by their works. They are detestable, disobedient, unfit for any good work." So even though he calls these folks, refers to them as defiled and unbelieving, he's not talking about atheists. He says here, "They profess to know God." That's very reminiscent of what Jesus has said in Matthew chapter 7. So there's not folks who will deny him with their words, but they deny him, he says, by their works. And because of that, they're detestable, because they are disobedient. And therefore, that renders them unfit for good works, or any good work, as Paul tells Titus here. Those who would work works that aren't lawful. But as we think beyond that to other ways to describe, now if that's what good works are lawful, good works are not therefore unlawful, But Paul's going to tell Titus that good works really are things that are beneficial and helpful to people. Look in chapter 3 in verse 8. Again, something else Paul had to say about good works to Titus. He says, "This saying is trustworthy, and I want you to insist on these things, so that those who have believed in God may be careful to devote themselves to good works." And this is what he says about good works in chapter 3, verse 8. "These things are excellent and profitable for people." So as we think about the idea of what are we talking about, we're talking about things that people benefit from. Things that are for their good. And as we think about that, certainly there are a couple of realms in which that would fall, but let's always begin with the most important. Spiritual works are the most beneficial to people. Good works of a spiritual nature are those that would bring people closer to God. And certainly there's no more important benefit than being right with God. So we need to do things that are beneficial to people and helpful to people spiritually and physically. Doing what people need. Seeing a need and addressing it. Looking for a need and an opportunity to help someone. And again, I think this group is very good at that. And again, I think we've been reminded just in the short and recent past that they come in all different shapes and sizes. We've dealt with physical needs that are what we would call routine. We've dealt with extraordinary physical needs caused by things like tornadoes and random acts of nature and things like that. And we've made the effort to reach out and see what do you need and then address that need. And we need to continually to do those sort of things. So when we're talking about good works here, they're first lawful, but then once we know they're lawful, we look to do those things that will be beneficial, that will be helpful to people. And we do them. Paul's also going to describe it to Titus there. We're talking about cases of urgent need. That's what he talks about. Chapter 3 and verse 14. He says this. He says, "Let our people," that's us, "our people, let our people learn to devote themselves to good works so as to help cases of urgent need and not be unfruitful." Urgent need. I wonder what we think about when we hear that phrase. The idea of an urgent need. Let me suggest to you there's a reminder here for us again to the most urgent need. Just before saying that in verse 14, look what Paul is talking about in verse 13. He says, "Do your best to spend Zenas the lawyer and Apollos on their way. See that they lack nothing." And what he's doing, he said, these men are going on a preaching trip. And you do what you can to contribute to that cause. You do what you can to support them. See that they're lacking nothing. And you can see in doing that, that the most urgent and pressing need people have is the spreading of the gospel. And I so appreciate Eric's comments this morning, again, about this group's devotion to doing that. But that's what Paul's talking about in verse 13. So there is no more urgent need for the sin-sick world than the truth of the gospel. And that's a good work. But there are other urgent needs as well. There are pressing physical needs. Again, opportunities for us to demonstrate love through benevolence, through the sharing of the things that we have, our time, our money, our concern, our effort, our work, if that's the case. To be mindful and on the lookout for those that have those pressing urgent needs. Those among us, their extended families, those we know who are dealing with sickness and the needs that that sometimes puts on folks. And again, be looking, be mindful for that. Or when, at times, the loss of a loved one, when needs develop, needs emerge. And again, this group does this. But let's let more of us do more of it. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about good works. And Paul urged that Christians should be a model of good works. He told Titus to be a model of good works in chapter 2, verse 7. "Show yourselves in all respects to be a model of good works. In your teaching, show integrity and dignity." So perk up here. You get to be a model, right? Everybody excited about that? But not necessarily that kind of model. The word here is, it says the idea of being a pattern. a proper pattern or an example worthy of imitation. What he's saying, Titus, is you show other people by being busy good works. Show other people, do it so that they could imitate it by seeing it in you. And if you're familiar with the context of this little letter, you realize that although he was a preacher, he had a responsibility to model good works for everyone. At least in his teaching, you're familiar with the first few verses of chapter 2, and you know how Paul delineates every demographic you could think of in a local church and what good works looks like for them. He talks, here's what you do primarily, Titus. You be sure you're teaching with what accords with sound doctrine. That's good work for a preacher. And in doing that, guess what you're going to do, verse 2? You're going to show the older men how they ought to behave. They should be sound in faith. Well, we always make the point that faith is an active working faith, don't we? So you could see that faith. They're to be sound in love. We talk about love as goodwill toward another. So acts of love would be demonstrable by these older men. Older women are to be reverent behavior, and their good work includes training the younger women. And then in that things, and those things they're to train the younger women for, you see what good works in the lives of younger women looks like. They're in verse 5, to be self-controlled, to be pure, workers at home, to be kind, to be submissive to their own husbands. Then he moves on in verse 6 to the younger men, and what good works looks like in your life, to be self-controlled. And he gets back to Titus, who was a young man, and he says, show yourselves in all respects to be a model of good works. And when he says in all respects, in everything you do, Titus, in such a way that everyone that hears you imitates it in their life. And let me suggest to you that if Titus was told to be a model and he was told to model good works, those that are modeling Titus have to model good works. And that's the point that Paul wanted him to understand. And this includes even for the elders. You go back and look in chapter 1, verses 5 through 9, you would have certainly what we'd recognize as the qualifications for elders. But there in verse 9, as far as what it would look like to watch this work being done, it says the elder must hold firm to the trustworthy word as taught so that he may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine and also to rebuke those who contradict it. That's good work for an elder. That's what Paul wanted to teach Titus to teach us. And he also addresses teaching. He's talking about good works here. And when Paul uses the word teaching here, he's not talking about the manner in which you teach, Titus. He's talking about what you teach. Teaching here is the idea of the word doctrine as it's translated in the older versions. And a good work of teaching involves teaching that is sound. It has integrity. It's teaching things and doctrine that is pure, that is sincere, and that is uncorrupted. And you see how these things are linked together. It's back to teaching what is lawful, not things that are outside the law. And the manner in which it's to be taught, I think this is more the attitude about that. That we should be appreciative for sound doctrine. We should be thankful that we can be thoroughly furnished into every good work. And we should value and hold sound doctrine and biblical teaching. We should regard it with honor and present it with gravity and seriousness. And that's a good work. And that's what Paul was telling Titus to model. But in addition to being an example of good works, comes an attitude about it, being ready for good works. In chapter 3 and verse 1, Titus is told to remind them, there's that idea again, remind them to be submissive to rulers and authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good work. And we think about the idea of being ready. It's just what you would imagine. It's a preparedness for that. Sometimes that takes the form of physical preparation. Maybe you've decided to lay a little money aside into your own personal benevolence funds. You know if a situation arises and someone needs help, you've got some funds earmarked for that. But in addition to, and maybe more so, it's a readiness of mind. To be the kind of person that even before a need is identified, you've already decided whatever it is, if I can help, I'm going to help. Whatever it costs me, money, time, effort, whatever it takes, I am ready. I'm prepared and willing. I'm prepared both with my stuff and with my mind and my heart for good works. And in the context of good works here, the church that Titus is preaching for is to be reminded to be submissive. That's a good work. And I think if we'll be honest with ourselves, we realize that takes work, doesn't it? It doesn't come natural to be submissive. I think, again, that's why it appears in a verse that begins with the idea, remind them. Because you know what? Human beings in the first century struggled with being submissive. And that wasn't just unique to them. But in and of itself, it is a work. The idea to be submissive is to subject oneself. It's not that someone is putting us into submission. It's that we're deciding to be submissive. We subject ourselves. And again, that was work for first century Christians. But I think it may be even more so work for American Christians. I think our culture is one of such the idea of individual rights and that rugged individualism, and that we really struggle with subjecting ourselves. I think we need to think about that. I think in addition to it being hard maybe for Americans generally, I think it's particularly hard for Americans in the age of social media, in the digital society we live in. We're also accustomed to getting this thing out and letting the world know how I feel about everything and starting the revolution with my thumbs because, nobody's going to do me in a way I don't want to be done. And I'm going to tell the whole world about it. We just feel obligated to do that. And we think we have a soundboard because we're going to get it out there and get tens of likes on it or something. We all have this expectation that I'm not subject to anyone or anybody. And then I have this way to get my thoughts out there. So I think we really struggle with this. And in the immediate context here, he's talking, I think, about submitting to government. The idea is he uses their rulers and authorities. And let me tell you, I've gotten in my adult life where there's nothing hardly I dread more than an election year. Because you know our culture is so polarized, our society is so polarized that it's painful to live through that. And then when you see those same attitudes creep in among brethren, it just makes it that much worse. And the more our culture and our society becomes polarized, the harder it is to think about one of them being elected and I have to subject myself to one of them. And that problem is so apparent in our culture, and brethren, we cannot let that come into the Lord's church. But we struggle with that. Be reminded. And now I'm going to up the ante just a little bit because I think generally we struggle with the idea of subjecting ourselves, but government's not the only place where that attitude needs to manifest itself. Brethren, as a group of believers here joined together, we're to subject ourselves to one another. We're to not dig our heels in and fight for our way, our whole elevate our opinion above others. In fact, that's the exact opposite of what we're told to do, to esteem others greater than yourself. And I want you to know the importance of doing this in Ephesians 5 and 21. When Paul talks about the need to do this, he describes it this way for believers. He says, submitting to one another out of our reverence for Christ. Don't submit to me out of your reverence for me. I'm not to submit to you out of my reverence for you. I'm to do it out of my reverence for Christ. Who's going to bow up and not do that? And then, brethren, I want you to listen closely to this part. We're commanded to submit to our elders. And I couldn't not warn you about that any more than I could anything else I could read in the scripture. That's not a choice. That's not as long as I agree with the decision. Is that difficult? Yeah. Again, particularly in our context sometimes. And I'll tell you, it'd be a little strong for me to say it keeps me up nights, so I'll be completely honest with you. But when I think about what I worry about what might be the flashpoint if we're going to have any internal struggles in this family that I love, it's the attitude some of you have about the elders. It's that sense that it's almost like it's my duty to criticize decisions that are made. and find other people that agree with me so I can complain with them. That's where I worry about a fracture or a fault line occurring here. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 5 with me. I want you to look at verse 5. And again, this teaching is just as plain as thou shalt not kill. 1 Peter 5 in verse 5, Peter there writing says, likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. And you might think, oh, this is just a younger, older thing. Well, that would be ignoring the context. Look at chapter 5, verse 1. So I exhort the elders among you as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory is going to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God that is among you. He's talking about the elders whose job it is to shepherd the flock of God among them. And what he says in verse 5 is, you who are younger, be subject to your elders. Subject yourselves to your elders. Look at verse 5, because there's the clue. There's how you do it. There's the problem. Clothe yourself, all of you, with humility toward one another. I already talked about that. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. When we struggle with submitting to the elders, what we need is a big old taste of humility. We've got to humble ourselves. We got to not think my job is to be an American citizen to get my opinion out. Let me suggest something, and that's all it is, a suggestion. Here's a little thing that has been helpful to me. And quite frankly, I'll be blunt with you. Some of you have been Christians too long not to have figured this out yet. But let me give you this little mental exercise that I find very helpful. And I'm going to say it out loud because that's what we're doing here. But this ought to take place in your head, and this takes place in my head. Elders announce something. And my thoughts might very likely go like this. Based on what I know about that situation, that may not be the exact decision I would have made. You know, I might not have handled it exactly that way. Or I might even think, you know, I'm not sure that's the choice is the best necessarily in these circumstances. And I might think that. But you know, with a little humility, the next thing I think is, but you know, I know that they know things I don't know. You know, I know they have information available to them that I don't have access to. You know, I know they're talking to other people who might not feel the exact same way I do about this. And then I might think, well, it's not inherently unscriptural. And then I think, okay, that's what we're doing. And all that happens in my head. I just said it out loud for your benefit. But let me suggest to you, Christian, if you haven't developed a mental framework like that, write that down. Go back and watch the video later. Write that down and use that. It's okay to have those inner conversations and then come to that conclusion. Showing humility. And then move on. For sheep, it's a good work to be subject to the elders. And as Paul continues writing Titus, he goes and gives these other examples of good works. Again, back in Titus, let's look in chapter 3, because he's going to give both positive and negative examples. Again, if we want to busy ourselves with good works, in Titus chapter 3 and verse 2, here's some things that you ought to incorporate in your way of doing things. To speak evil of no one, to avoid quarreling, to be gentle, to show perfect courtesy toward all people. Those are some worthy goals there, aren't they? If those aren't in my portfolio of how I deal with other folks, I really ought to start including them. But he also includes some things to avoid. Maybe hopefully some behaviors that used to be us, but don't describe us any longer. Verse 3, for ourselves were once foolish, disobedient. That kind of dovetails into our previous discussion. Led astray or slaves to various passions and pleasures, passing our days in malice and envy, hated by others and hating one another. Don't do that. Those are bad works. But cultivate those things you find in verse 2. And we're to be ready for every good work. Because Paul's going to tell Titus we need to be devoted to good works. In fact, he says, insist on it, Titus. Insist so that those who have believed in God may be careful to devote themselves to good works. Devoted to good works. And when we think of the idea of devotion, The definition here, it's a preset or well-established character. That's what people can expect from you. You're devoted to good works. That's your preset. So you're that person that when the situation arises, you're ready for that good work because you're devoted to them. It becomes less about what you do and completely about who you are. And he wants us to be devoted. He wants us to be careful about it, but not in the sense of you see that word, you think what careful usually means, you think about, well, before I do good works, I need to put on a helmet or something. That's not what he's talking about. That is a motivation for him, is that you're full of care. Really, it's more idea about being caring is what we would talk about if we were talking about this. It's not being careful for ourselves. It's thinking about others. It's acting out one's inner visceral opinion. In other words, I ought to be caring for others. And when I do, I'm going to act like it. And I'm going to do that by devoting myself to good works. Let me tell you what goes a long way. Avoiding inconsequential questions and debates. Particularly again in the context of maintaining unity in a local group. In Titus 3 and verse 9 he says that avoid foolish controversies, genealogies, dissensions, and quarrels about the law, for they are unprofitable and worthless. So avoid those things that really don't matter but might cause problems. How you deal with that? Don't do it. Avoid it. And look what he says why in verses 10 and 11. For a person who stirs up division after warning him once and then twice have nothing more to do with him or her. Knowing that such a person is warped and sinful, he is self-condemned. Avoid questions and debates about things that don't make a difference. And then I want us to think about this idea. As we try to put all these things together, devotion to good works is a learned behavior. Verse 14, again, a point he makes there. Look at that. And let our people learn to devote themselves to good works so as to help cases of urgent need and not be unfruitful. Again, I commend this group. If you're one of us, I'm so happy that this is how we are. If you're visiting, I am bragging on us a little bit this morning. This group is devoted to good works, but Paul's point is we can learn to be even more devoted. More of us can learn to be more devoted to more good works. And that's really what the challenge is for us this year for 2022. Let's learn to make it our personal goal, because it's great that it's a congregational goal, but these things happen on the personal level. So let's each one of us make it our personal goal in 2022 to learn to devote ourselves to good works. And let's think again about what good works are. Let's be eager to do good works. That's the things that God has created for us and created us for. And I hope you saw that. Let's be a model of good works. Let's set the example so that others see us and see someone who's busy doing good works. Let's be ready for every good work. Make the necessary preparations, both materially and psychologically, mentally, that you're ready in both with stuff and with heart and mind. And then let's be devoted to good works. Let's work this year to make good works more than what we do, but who we are. And why do we want to do that? We'll go back to where we started. Jesus gave himself for that purpose. He gave himself for us to redeem us from all lawlessness and to cleanse for himself a people for his own possession. And he wanted that people who were his to be eager to do good works. What about you this morning? Are you part of his people? Have you been redeemed? Do you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, that he died for that purpose, and that he gave himself for you? How have you responded to that gift? If you're here this morning, you're not a Christian, you simply need to confess that faith in him as the Son of God, to turn away from the sin in your life and then be buried in baptism for the forgiveness of that sin. And then come up out of that water, one of his own possession, eager to do good works. If you're here and you're a Christian, hopefully we've at least thumped your eager meter a little bit this morning. Think about it. Has that been me? And again, most of you it has. But can I turn it up a little bit? Can I find 11 on my eager meter? And can I get busy in 2022 doing good works? There's something we can do to help you, and you need to respond to the invitation. Come forward now while we stand and while we sing.